This is a Flashbooks audio summary on Antifragile, Things That Gain from Disorder. Written and published by GetFlashbooks.com. Narrated by Dean Bukhari. Original author, Nassim Nicholas Taleb. Antifragile by Nassim Taleb is about the things in life that improve and actually thrive when subjected to stress, uncertainty, and disorder. Just like your muscles thrive and strengthen when they're subjected to stressful situations such as an intense weightlifting session. Just like scandals and rumors have a propensity to spread like wildfire when people try to cover them up, or how riots and protests get even bigger when they're repressed, there's a wide category of other things in life that also benefit from this kind of chaos, disorder, and volatility. This category is what author Nassim Taleb refers to as the antifragile. Antifragility is not the same as resilience. Now, while resilience is about resisting stress while staying the same, antifragility is about resisting, even welcoming, stress while getting better and better. Here's what we'll talk about in this book summary. How volatility and uncertainty often tend to be the key ingredient of improvement. The difference between the fragile and the antifragile. And how to leverage antifragility in your own life so that you can benefit from stress, chaos, and unpredictability in both your personal and professional endeavors. A quick crucial quote before we dive into the big ideas. Quote, "The antifragile loves randomness and uncertainty, which also means, crucially, a love of errors, a certain class of errors. Antifragility has a singular property of allowing us to deal with the unknown, to do things without understanding them, and do them well. Let me be more aggressive. We are largely better at doing than we are at thinking. Thanks to antifragility, I'd rather be dumb and antifragile than extremely smart and fragile anytime." Unquote. Big idea number one. Fragile things break under stress, while antifragile things grow stronger and better. Fragile objects need to be handled with extraordinary care. Imagine a situation where you have to pack a wooden item and another where you have to pack an item made of glass. Given the fragile nature of glass, you would take a lot of extra care in packing it securely, right? In a nutshell, you could say that a fragile thing needs to be guarded against any volatile situations. However, is it possible that there may be things which actually benefit from volatile circumstances? This can be sort of a tricky question. After all, how could anything actually benefit from disorder and deliberate unpredictability? Going back to the aforementioned analogy about the glass and fragility, how do we define something that gets better from being handled roughly as opposed to the careful handling of fragile glass? Interestingly, Taleb tells us that most of the world's languages have no term to describe these things, things that gain from disorder. So, he decided to coin his own term, thus the advent of the word antifragile. A classic example of the concept of antifragility can be found in the mythical Greek creature Hydra. In Greek mythology, Hydra was portrayed as a serpent with countless heads. And every time someone cut off one head, two more sprang up in its place, making the creature virtually invincible. So in a way, Hydra actually profited from the chaos and volatility rather than being harmed by it. And therefore, we'd refer to Hydra as antifragile. Every time you hurt it, it comes back stronger. Every time you try to bring it down, it becomes better, gets back up, stronger than before. Like Hydra, there are many things that actually prefer and in fact require stress, resistance, chaos, even temporary failure in order to grow and become stronger. These are the things that we call antifragile. Big idea number two. An antifragile system always comprises of fragile constituent parts. In a way, you could say that the universe is antifragile in nature. Consider the evolutionary process, which must put up with an enormous amount of resistance, volatility, and chaos just in order to grow and transform from an inferior life form to a superior one. Every evolution actually transforms the available chaos into a new strength. This is how we, as human beings, have evolved into thinking, walking, talking, tool-building human beings. However, there is another aspect to consider. While the evolutionary process is anti-fragile in nature, its constituent parts are actually incredibly fragile. Every organism that is a part of evolution simply perishes while passing on the genetic code to make the next one better. It's this code that helps evolution improve its creations endlessly and endlessly and endlessly to continue to become better and better and better. The anti-fragility of the evolutionary process is actually dependent upon the fragility of the constituent parts. The system can withstand all forms of chaos and volatility only if it can dispose of its constituent parts with ease. The weaker parts are disposed, they get rid of the weaker parts, and the rest go stronger and become stronger, build that strength, and the system advances as a whole, overall. And through a sort of trial and error involving the constituent parts, the system is able to chart the best possible path and continue its journey. Antifragility can also be seen in the economic systems. Economic systems evolve and improve in the face of chaos and unpredictability. And in order to evolve, the constituent parts, such as businesses, startups, corporations, and banks, often have to fail. These failures then help the economy grow, become stronger and better overall, and become more efficient. So it can be said that for a system to be truly anti-fragile, its constituent parts must be fragile in nature. And as a result, they learn from those fragilities and build up a sense of resilience that actually grows and helps them become anti-fragile, helps them become better. Big idea number three, anti-fragile systems gain new strength and build up extra capacity in the face of shocks and stressors. Quote, "Anti-fragility is beyond resilience or robustness. The resilient resists shocks and stays the same. The anti-fragile gets better." Anti-fragility is a regular part of our daily lives. You actually experience it in something as simple as exercising, for instance. During exercise, your body has to face an extraordinary amount of stress in the form of weights or physical activity. Our body then reacts to this extra stress by strengthening the muscles, by rebuilding those muscle fibers and making them stronger. More specifically, the body actually overcompensates by building up its capacity. This is done so that the body can deal with a similar situation in the future in a better way. So the body gains strength when put through adversity. This fundamental principle applies to all forms of anti-fragility. It encapsulates the concept very well. Anti-fragile systems often tend to build up extra strength and extra capacity in response to volatility, i.e., in response to when you lift weights and put that burden on your muscles. They become stronger, they bounce back, they get bigger. Such overcompensation may be regarded as a waste of resources. But a closer look reveals that such overcompensation by an anti-fragile system is absolutely crucial to its resilience in the face of all volatility in general. A redundancy of resources allows an anti-fragile system to face the unpredictable future and to face that future ahead without any qualms, without any worries, or at least not as many as if you had a fragile system. right? Consider your own body and the way regular exercise actually affects you. You may not need those muscles that you build up on a regular basis, but in case of a real emergency, your physical strength might actually help you immensely in doing a lot more than most other people, not to mention the fact that it increases your overall health, boosts your energy, and helps you in many different areas of life, including the longevity of life itself. So the overcompensation done by an anti-fragile system really comes into play when the system faces an unusual amount of stress, when it has to deal with unpredictability. A stressor for your body, for instance, may be to carry an injured person in your arms for over a mile to get them to safety at the hospital. Now, you might find no immediate reward for your muscles in your daily life, but they might be a lifesaver in a crucial situation like that. Like our bodies, every anti-fragile system builds up its capacity and its strength when faced with adversity and when faced with stress. And this additional strength eventually helps the system face unknown problems in a much better way. Big idea number four, volatility is critical to anti-fragility. Tranquility leads to fragility. Anti-fragility is usually seen only in natural systems which can automatically adapt to their failures and then benefit from them. Man-made systems can't be anti-fragile simply because they lack the capacity to adapt and improve in real time. Man-made systems like, for instance, machines, can be made to function perfectly in a pristine way, but they cannot grow stronger over time by learning from their failures. The one exception to this rule is the economy. The economy may be regarded as a human construct, but it's almost as anti-fragile as any naturally existing system. Like natural systems, an economy has multiple layers, an exceptional amount of complexity, the ability to adjust to volatility, and above all, a plethora of fragile parts and moving pieces which help the overall economy remain anti-fragile. Now, it's important to note here that complexity alone is not going to guarantee anti-fragility. More importantly, a system needs volatility and chaos in order to retain its anti-fragility in the first place. Such volatility destroys some fragile constituent parts of the system while lending a new level of strength to the surviving parts and makes the system more resilient overall. If the volatility and chaos came to an end, the system would just stop improving and in time would lose its strength and its anti-fragility. One of the reasons why economies are anti-fragile is because they're built to coexist with a certain degree of unpredictability. If the market volatility and chaos ended all of a sudden, the economy would grow fragile and lose all of its vitality. Now, this has been experienced every time a government has tried to tame the economy by bringing it all under a system. This results in a declining economy, which can no longer adapt and eventually suffers and sometimes collapses altogether. An anti-fragile system remains anti-fragile as long as volatility is available as a stressor. Environments conducive to tranquility may turn even an anti-fragile system into a fragile one. Big idea number five. You can benefit from anti-fragility simply by seizing the opportunity with no need to understand the details. In other words, you don't have to know every little which way that this concept works in order to benefit from it. During his experience in the global currency markets, Taleb observed something interesting. He found out that, for some odd reason, it was the uneducated traders who were actually more successful in the volatile currency market as compared to the more educated ones. Now, how could that be? The uneducated traders didn't know a whole lot about global economy and knew even less about formal economic concepts, but they did know when it was the right time to buy and when it was the right time to sell. This observation doesn't really apply only to the currency market either. Our society actually has a tendency to place an uneven amount of value on formal knowledge, while regarding practical knowledge, aka street smarts, as less valuable. But the fact is that practical knowledge often trumps academic knowledge in real-life application, real-life situations. Let's consider the example of the currency market. Imagine a scenario where you get the opportunity to buy a stock for price X at a certain time. You realize that if you jump on the opportunity when the price rises above X, you would get a discount, whereas exercising your option when the price is below X is not as advantageous. This is just a simple and practical piece of information, simple practical knowledge that you need to know when making a profitable decision. Knowing more about how the market works and all the details and what factors affect it might aid you very, very little in making that crucial decision that's either going to put money in your pocket or put that money into somebody else's pocket. And similar situations occur in our everyday lives as well. For instance, you have the option of either spending a quiet evening by the beach or going to a downtown party. This means that you have an option, and you can choose one of the two options only. You don't need to understand or forecast what it's going to be like by the beach versus at the party. You've just got to choose one option when the time comes, because you can only go to one. And so when dealing with the anti-fragility of any system, including our own lives, all we need to do is seize the opportunity to choose at the right time, when that time comes. There's no need to understand the opportunity in all of its intricacies and all of its specifics. We've just got to choose. Big idea number 6, the barbell strategy. Volatility and uncertainty are an inevitable part of our lives. We're exposed to major risks like financial failure, life-threatening situations, natural disasters, and so much more. And there's little that we can do to avoid these types of risks. But what we can do is turn ourselves into anti-fragile systems. In other words, what we've got to do is come to terms with the volatility of our lives and use it to our advantage. And Taleb tells us that the barbell strategy is an excellent way to accomplish this. A barbell has weights on two ends with no weights in the middle. Likewise, the key to leveraging barbells in your own personal and professional endeavors is to aim for the two extremes of your life and let the middle part of your life just be. Right? For example, imagine how a barbell looks like. It's a long bar and there's weights on one end, and then there's weights on the other end. No weights in the middle, right? Now, these two extremes are the negative and positive elements of your life. Minimize your exposure to the negative elements while growing your positive elements as much as possible. For instance, consider your financial assets. The risk to financial assets is market volatility. You can mitigate this risk by placing 90% of your assets in an investment which is secure against most market ups and downs. As for the 10%, put them through high volatility investments. Even if you lose them, you only lose 10% of your net assets. And yet, if the investment goes right, you may make a huge profit. This way, you're able to make the most of the market volatility without risking everything you have. The barbell strategy tries to imitate the resilience of an anti-fragile system. In comparison, imagine someone who puts 100% of his assets in an investment with a medium risk. If one day the market turns, he stands to lose everything. Now, do barbells apply in other areas of life? Of course. Let's say you want to become a successful writer. How would you apply the barbell strategy? Let's break down 3 quick examples of the right approach, the wrong approach, and the worst approach. Let's begin with the right approach, an example of how to properly implement the barbell strategy if you want to become a successful writer or insert whatever endeavor that you have. Now, on the left end of your hypothetical barbell would be your boring day job to pay the bills. And then all the way on the other end of your barbell, there's you, focusing fully on writing every day after work, on honing your craft. Now, the result here would be, by doing one extreme, super dull, boring day job that doesn't require much of your energy, and then allowing you to put all of your energy into focusing fully on writing after work, your chances of becoming a successful writer are far higher. Because now the result is that you've got a stable, sustainable way to pour all your energy into a successful writing career. Now, that's a right approach. That's a good approach to utilizing the barbell strategy. The wrong approach, this is the next one here. Here's what you would not want to do if you want to succeed. Left end of the barbell, you've got your average job. Right end of the barbell, you've got average writing. The result here is an average job that steals your energy, stresses you out, and doesn't give you enough free time to focus on becoming an extraordinary writer. See, if you've got an average job, that's going to pull an average, if not higher, amount of energy from you, which is going to pull your focus from becoming a top-notch writer. Now, here's the worst approach, which is quite obvious. Finally, just to drive this idea home, here's an even more obvious example again than the one we just mentioned of how not to apply the barbells in life. Left extreme of the barbell, you've got no job at all. Right extreme of the barbell, you're fully focused on becoming a successful writer. The result? Obviously, you'd be too broke to put food in the fridge, let alone focus on building a successful writing career. Now, in order to become anti-fragile, it's crucial that you're able to manage your risks intelligently and make the most of the volatility around you. Big idea number 7. Unexpected crises affect larger systems more adversely than smaller ones. In understanding the volatility and risks of a system, it's important to understand how it's actually affected by an unexpected crisis. As a rule of thumb, Taleb tells us that the larger a system or an organization is, the worst it will be hit in a crisis. Consider this example. Let's say you have to attend a conference next month. So you book a cheap flight a few weeks in advance. At the last minute, you're told by the airline that the flight just got canceled. There's no way out. Now, you have to find an alternative, which is likely going to be a lot pricier. This kind of crisis is usually called a squeeze, the exact opposite of the options idea that we discussed in one of our earlier big ideas. A squeeze is a kind of crisis where you have only one choice to make, and it's usually a costly one. The larger the size of the body that's being squeezed, the greater the cost. Going back to the example we just mentioned, imagine it wasn't just you, but a whole group of your colleagues or coworkers who had to attend the conference. Now what happens? Now, when the group faces this last-minute cancellation, it's got to find an alternative. And given the size of the group, it may have no other choice but to find space in the underbooked first-class area of that airline or another airline altogether. In other words, the group may have to pay a lot more than it originally intended to spend on the flight. In other words, they just got squeezed. Today, we live in the age of huge entities. And thanks to globalization, the global economy is a single interconnected organism of sorts. Your local grocery store, your bank, your employer, your government are all connected to the global economy. And if one portion of the global economy comes crashing down, it affects all the rest, down to your local grocery store and your bank. So any economic squeeze that may occur in our age today is going to have global consequences. Again, the bottom line that Taleb tries to drive home with this big idea is that the size of a system is directly related to the nature and severity of the crisis it faces. The larger an organization, the larger the crisis. Big idea number 8. Anti-fragile modern professions survive at the expense of everyone else. Just ahead of the global economic crisis of 2008, many leading financial experts confidently claim that the economy was safe and sound and bustling and all of this other stuff. But soon afterwards, they were actually proven wrong, big time, much to the harm of hundreds of millions of people and countless businesses around the globe. The economy collapsed, banks failed, businesses shut down, homes were lost and foreclosed on, the unemployment rate skyrocketed, and the entire world felt the tremors of the 2008 economic crisis. And yet, these so-called financial experts didn't incur any harm themselves, despite being so ridiculously wrong. Most of them, in fact, continued to enjoy the influence they had and didn't even lose their jobs. This was simply because they worked in a highly specialized niche where they relied on each other. As a result, they didn't point out each other's blunders and all of their errors, and no one held them accountable for those errors, for those mistakes that they made that had such a negative impact on so many people. This phenomenon frequently occurs and recurs in the modern world. Certain professions just tend to enjoy exceptional anti-fragility at the cost of other people. They don't have any downside themselves. All they have is upside, in other words. While they enjoy all the benefits when they are right, others have to suffer the consequences when they are wrong. And this anomaly is particularly noticeable in the money business, the financial sectors. Bankers also enjoy a sort of anti-fragility at the cost of others. They're supposed to intelligently utilize other people's money. So, when they succeed at doing this, they get bonuses and promotions. But when they fail to meet their goal, they incur no harm, and it's the investors who lose their money. In contrast, bankers in medieval Catalonia faced beheadings when they failed, which proved a good enough motivator for them to make the right decisions for all people. Many of the professions, bottom line here is, that are anti-fragile today enjoy this anti-fragility at the cost of other people's interests. And Taleb threads throughout the book the idea of ethics and morality with anti-fragility. And this obviously is not that. Big idea number 9. The attempt to remove volatility and bring order to everything will inevitably create a more fragile society. Modern society strives to eliminate all volatility and make all aspects of life predictable and orderly. An economy, like an anti-fragile system, undergoes a regular cycle of boom and bust, which keeps it robust and strong. But economists want to be able to predict economic patterns with more precision, and so they strive to develop theories whereby they can interfere with this cycle at an appropriate time in order to reduce the impact of a financial crisis. This is not limited to the economy either, by the way. Our modern society views order and tranquility as a good thing, and so it strives to bring order to everything. Human knowledge also plays a role in this. The more we know, the more we believe we should control a system, then let it take its natural path. This is what leads to human interventionism in different systems. But the problem here is that we human beings, we're not as smart as we'd like to think we are. Our scope of knowledge cannot control every little element of every system with so much perfection and precision as to eliminate the potential of every possible downside. Not possible. Human interventionism eliminates volatility and hopes that it will improve things, but instead, it makes the system fragile and takes away its anti-fragility. An explosive effect of this drastic change is that many problems that would otherwise surface soon, more immediately, stay below the surface, and they just continue to grow as they rumble along below the radar, and when they do finally surface, they are so massive that they become catastrophes. This is simply because the system is no longer anti-fragile enough to deal with the problem at the right time. Take forest fires, for example. any huge forest will likely be filled with inflammable trees, which put the forest at risk of a mass forest fire. If the forest experiences a series of small fires, this inflammable material is likely to burn out without causing too much damage on a massive scale. But if the small fires that would have occurred were prevented, diligently prevented via human interventionism, ultimately the inflammable material would pile up more and more and more and more and more, eventually leading to a huge, massive firestorm. The same thing applies to anti-fragile systems in which humans intervene. And in the long run, the human desire to bring order to all chaos and remove all volatility and uncertainty will turn our society into a more fragile system. Big idea number 10, the turkey problem. Modern society's flawed attempts to predict the future by reading the past. Imagine you're a turkey enjoying a happy life at a farm. It's the month of October, and if someone asked you to predict your future by looking at the past, you'd probably say that it was going to be nice and bright and happy. But when Thanksgiving Day arrives the following month, and the farmer needs a turkey for the dinner table, the turkey realizes its fatal mistake. This is a fair analogy of our age. In our attempts to predict everything, we want to predict the future, and we look at the past in order to do so. Financial experts predict the future of the global economy. Newspapers predict how the next decade of politics will turn out to be. And companies hire top-end strategists in an attempt to predict market conditions. If you had followed the most recent presidential election in 2016, by the way, then you probably know how wrong the pollsters were in trying to predict who the next president was going to be. The polls favored, on a massive scale, Hillary Clinton, disproportionately so, versus Donald Trump. But as it turns out, he ended up becoming the winner and the president of the United States, even though that's not how the pollsters predicted things to end up. So we always try to predict these types of things. And this is a great example of the turkey problem. All these attempts inevitably suffer, again, from what Taleb calls this term that he coined, the turkey problem. The future is ever new, in other words. And no matter how hard we try to predict the future through the narrow scope of the past, it's going to surprise us. And those who directly rely on such predictions will have to suffer the consequences. In predicting the future, another mistake we often make is to assume that nothing will happen that has not happened already. Again, in predicting the future, another mistake we often make is to assume that nothing new is going to happen. So, we take the worst instance of the past as our worst case scenario when designing our contingency plans and things of that sort. What we fail to realize, though, is that a completely unexpected and completely new event may occur in the future, destroying all of our plans and all of our preconceived notions of what could be. Let's take, for example, the destruction of the Fukushima nuclear reactor. This is an example that Taleb gives in the book, where the reactor was constructed to withstand the biggest earthquake that had ever rocked the region in the past. But then, in 2011, you know what's coming here, an even bigger earthquake struck and destroyed the reactor entirely, leading to a whole host of massive problems. See, the turkey problem of our age often leads to such disastrous fiascos. We look from the lens of the past to predict the future, and this is a mistake that we've got to stop making. Big idea number 11. Our society consistently fails to understand how anti-fragility fuels social and scientific progress. Quote, in short, the fragilista, medical, economic, social planning, is one who makes you engage in policies and actions, all artificial, in which the benefits are small and visible, and the side effects potentially severe and invisible. Unquote. Formal education tells us that scientific advancements were what eventually led to the Industrial Revolution. We're told that the first advances were conceived as theories, and then these theories were applied in practice, eventually bringing about the innovation and change to the area of manufacturing via the Industrial Revolution. However, this is a false and narrow narrative of the Industrial Revolution and the way things actually ended up turning out. The Industrial Revolution was not sparked with theory. Instead, it was actually a result of amateurs and passionate hobbyists who worked on their ideas and inventions away from educational institutions and scientific laboratories. Take the example of the submarine. It was invented by Reverend George Garrett, a minister who worked on his submarine idea on his spare time, eventually creating something entirely new. Hobbyists like George Garrett and many others were part of an anti-fragile system. They didn't work in any definite system. They simply followed their interests and their instincts, tinkering with things and trying to transform their ideas into reality. Many of their ideas failed. Many of them were bad. But the ones that succeeded had a dramatic impact on the world. But the way we interpret the Industrial Revolution is simply a result of our inability to understand anti-fragility. Modern society cannot conceive of chaos, unpredictability, and chance. Even more so, it cannot believe that such unprecedented progress was born amid such volatility. So, our modern narrative tries to force some form of order onto how the Industrial Revolution occurred. And it's wrong. By ascribing deterministic reasons to the scientific progress that was made during the revolution, we hope to make some sort of sense out of the volatility, which is what was actually going on during the Industrial Revolution. Such thinking also affects how modern scientific innovation actually takes place. Today, professionals have to assure their educators and investors that they will invent something really groundbreaking in return for their support. On one hand, this limits the scope of true, actual discovery and innovation. And on the other hand, it simply takes away the true spirit of invention and innovation. To create something that can bring about progress, randomness, and anti-fragility are absolutely critical. They're critically essential. Today, we erroneously believe that an orderly, systematic approach is what has brought about most human innovations and discoveries. But anti-fragility has played an equal part, if not more, in the scientific and social progress of human society as a whole. And if we are to continue making this kind of progress, it's absolutely critical that we embrace, rather than eliminate, the chaotic beauty of anti-fragility, both in our personal lives, our professional lives, as well as a society as a whole. Closing notes. The key takeaway from anti-fragile is this. Anti-fragility is the ability of any system to manipulate chaos and volatility in order to evolve endlessly into something better. Since the dawn of mankind, anti-fragility has fueled human progress. But today, our modern society aims to remove all volatility and bring everything under a definite form of order. And this will inevitably turn us into a more fragile society. Actionable insights. Be prepared for the future. Don't spend your energy on trying to predict it. Instead, be ready for it no matter what it has to offer. Whether the future turns out to be good or bad, you've got to be prepared to use every eventuality to your advantage. A good way to ensure this is to manage your risks effectively. Secure most of your assets and then use the rest to take risks in the volatile market. This way, you manage your risks while at the same time profit from volatility. And the next actionable insight is to avoid getting squeezed. And to this end, Try to have multiple options at all times. Squeezes inevitably force you to make poor decisions. So, try to avoid them as much as possible. Squeezes essentially force you to do something regardless of the cost you have to pay for it. Always remember that it's better to do something by choice rather than by necessity. For instance, if you are finding a new apartment, try to find one where you have the option to stay as long as you want to, instead of having to stay as per the owner's requirements. This way, you have an option instead of a squeeze, and you can always move out when the rent or the circumstances no longer favor living there. And the final actionable insight is this: ignore the experts in most cases. A professional expert gives advice without running any risks. Instead, anyone who follows the advice stands to face all the risk instead. For instance, if a financial expert gives you some advice about where to invest your money and it turns out to be wrong, you lose the money if you follow it, while he does not incur any loss whatsoever. Instead, it might be a better idea to find out where he puts his own assets and investments. This will be a better guide than any advice that he might be able to dole out to you in his own interest. About the author. Nassim Nicholas Taleb is an essayist, author, professor, statistician, former trader, and risk analyst whose work focuses on problems of randomness, probability, and uncertainty. His 2007 book, The Black Swan, was described as one of the 12 most influential books since World War II. He notably criticized the risk management methods used by the finance industry and warned about a looming financial crisis, subsequently profiting from the late 2000s financial crisis. He advocates what he calls a black swan robust society, meaning a society that can withstand difficult to predict events. He proposes anti-fragility in systems, that is, an ability to benefit and grow from a certain class of random events, errors, and volatility, as well as convex tinkering as a method of scientific discovery, by which he means that decentralized experimentation outperforms directed research. In other words, try rather than theorize. You can learn more and connect with Taleb at fooledbyrandomness.com. Thank you for listening to this Flashbooks audio summary on Anti-Fragile, Things That Gain from Disorder, written and published by getflashbooks.com, narrated by Dean Bakari, original author Nassim Nicholas Taleb. For more great self-improvement and business book summaries you can read or listen to anytime, anywhere, visit us at getflashbooks.com.